life's been so sweet to me. Life's been so sweet to me.
Welcome to On Mindfulness. This show is an offering of the Shasta Resilience Project. I'm your host, Sharon Brisolera. And on this show, we explore mindfulness, different modalities, different skills, different ways of practicing, and we speak to a range of people who practice and share their practices. And today on the show, we're going to be talking about drumming as a mindfulness practice. And we have Benny Beck-Hope, who's here with us. And I'm going to let you, Benny, introduce yourself.
This is Benny Hope. I am the founder of California Youth Partnership. CYP is dedicated to building agency in youth in our county so that they can make optimal health choices. And one simple way to define optimal health, according to Office of Population Affairs, is a dynamic balance between physical, emotional, social, spiritual, and intellectual health. It's called optimal health model.
How does that differ, if you know, from like a whole person approach? It sounds very similar.
It's very similar. And I think oftentimes we think of physical, emotional, mental, and we don't understand that as a whole being, there are other components. And so I think it's really good to keep that in mind as we do, as each of us get on a healing journey.
I know one of the things, and I wanted to talk to you about how you came to mind-body medicine practice in a second. When we present mind-body medicine, and there's a section where we talk about spirituality. And in that model, there's a lot of caretaking taken to say this is a broader approach. It's not necessarily denominational or religious. We can think of it as a human experience. And so I'm wondering, for you, when you think about the spiritual dimensions, how you explain that and how you invite people into that who have a more narrow vision of what spirituality means.
I think just we're the way our humans are shaped. And if you actually look at brain research, recently I've heard a neurologist say that there is something in our brain that continually asks us, did you meet your goal? Or did you meet your dream? And it doesn't matter whether you're a billionaire and you've become a billionaire that you set out to be, but there is this way that we were created and in our brain that continues to ask us. So there's just we are created to ask deeply, what are we here for? What's our purpose? What do I want to do? What do I want to dream? So oftentimes I just share research like that to help students as well as adults understand that that's how we are shaped.
And that's part of what's meant by spiritual, the beyond physical, mental, emotional, our dreams and purpose. And
I think it's our personal connection to, sometimes it is a spiritual being, and it's that intimate connection.
Something beyond ourselves. Right. That's a great way of thinking about it. So you are, I first got to know you as a mind-body medicine facilitator. And on the show, we've talked to a lot of different practitioners. What initially drew you to mind-body medicine as a modality?
Yeah, I've been very interested in this area for a long time, just in terms of healing and restoration in people. I've been in education for 35 years, and so just naturally, this has become a very big topic of interest. But I think personally for me, I did have some family members who struggle with mental challenges. And also, because we do programming with youth in the county, we had 1 year where we had a suicide completion of a student. And that really impacted me personally and my own mental health. And so then I began, well, I need to get myself regulated so that I can really stay with these people to support them. And I'm really big on prevention education. So how can we equip people with skills so that we can actually help them before they get to the crisis point? So that's how I began my journey, and I began to look around in the county what's available. And that's how I came across the skills group.
When you were speaking, it makes me think to not only to help before a crisis point, but for those people who struggle long term, some support in navigating the challenges that come up again and again.
And I just often hear, as I reached out to different groups and parents of who have kids with mental health challenges and all different types of groups, they always talk about how the caretakers have a burnout and they have a mental breakdown because it does take so much to come alongside somebody with mental health challenges and support them. So I didn't want to get myself into that situation, and I just kind of caught myself beginning to kind of deplete. So that's when I said, well, I got to be active and stay preventative for myself and the ones that are around me that we serve.
Yeah, and we have talked a lot about caregivers in general, people in the helping professions, what a need that is, how tremendously we saw it during COVID, and how we see that need play out in local government when people are expressing their needs. And it can be so easy to take things personally and have a hard time navigating differences or challenging emotions.
Yes.
Many of our practitioners offer mind-body medicine groups in different ways. Have you offered one of the traditional formats of mind-body medicine?
Yes. First, I began by training our staff on the skills so that they could integrate it into our current programs. And I've also done self-care workshops for educators in the schools, and where I've incorporated the skills. And I have also held community-based 8-week courses workshop as well.
Yeah, and listeners hopefully have gotten the idea that there are many different formats. Have you noticed over time an increased openness to learning skills, resistance to learning skills, feeling like, oh, I already know this stuff? What are you seeing currently in people's response to you?
Well, I think people who first attend the classes or workshops, usually there's a little bit of, how should I say, bit of a wall initially, and we just have to break it down, that it's really not, that it can be an individualized experience, and it's and not a promotion of one form or another, but really an exploration of all different ways that research shows that we are not just a one-dimensional being, but we actually think and feel and move based on all different inputs. And so, you know, I just try to unpack it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then by the time I think towards the end of it, and as they experience different things, they realize, oh, I can apply this regardless of what I know in the past, that this can be a very practical and helpful tool.
So we're offering the Shasta Resilience Project tries to offer a retreat twice a year and sometimes once a year. And you have graciously offered to do drumming as a mindfulness practice at our next retreat, which will be March 22nd. And we'll put links to that and other things in the show notes. And I've lived in different places and cultures where drumming can mean very different things. So I was hoping you could share with listeners, when you think about drumming or drumming as a mindfulness practice, how do you envision that? What kind of drumming?
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe I can share a little bit of a history of how I got into drumming. For the same reasons I shared before of why I began this journey, I belong to an art center in Southern California, and I began to attend a drumming social club. And at that time, I was really processing some deep, deep losses in my life. Mm. And so I didn't really know what I was getting into, but I've always loved the sound of drums. So I joined this club, and it was the leader was African. And he led us. And I just began to notice my own work. I follow Jesus, and I'm a, you know, spiritual person. And as I did the drumming, it really helped me to just release a lot of stress. And I was, even during drumming, I was able to cry. And he cultivated the space where oftentimes, whether it's physical or emotional hurts, people would sometimes dance in the middle of it, and I began to dance. And it just brought a lot of healing and release to myself. Mm. That's how it first began. But then I just loved it. I just picked up a djembe, and I just began to just incorporate that into my own spiritual journey, and I began to notice some positive things. And then as I began to go into like smart moves as an educator and brain research and all of these practices, EMDR, rapid eye movement, and all of these things, and I began to realize, oh my gosh, this really, really makes sense because of this bilateral tapping that we do, and how also it helps us to focus and kind of not think about all the fleeting thoughts that overwhelm us, but it helps us to center ourselves. Mm. So then I began to make the connection. So it kind of went the other way around for me in my journey.
Drumming also is so physical. There's that, the sound and what you feel in your body. Definitely a full body experience. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing for you, I know for me, the times that I've done it.
And then I began to look at the historical use of drumming in all the cultures in Africa, in Asia. And drumming was, you know, traditionally used as a healing, as a ceremony, to grieve, to celebrate, you know, and it was all incorporated as a social event. And I think that social thing, there's something to be said about healing that comes when we are able to share that process with others. And so I incorporated it into my education, and I first tried it out in juvenile hall school. And I just began to see immediately how students responded. And when they get dysregulated, I would just stop the class and say, okay, let's drum for 5 minutes. Mm. And how that really centered the students.
Mm. If you're just joining us, you're listening to On Mindfulness, and I'm speaking with Benny Hope about drumming as a mindful practice. you just described one of the qualities of mindfulness that we typically think about, that ability to regulate, to ground, to center. Are there other ways that you see drumming as particularly suited or amenable to mindfulness?
Oftentimes I hear when you start with breathing, lots of people have difficulty doing that. When they have lived in this dysregulation for a long time, or their brain is already overwhelmed, it's really difficult for them to just all of a sudden sit in quietness and bring themselves down. I particularly think this is very useful for young individuals, especially who doesn't understand, and even with adults. But if you start with drumming and you break it in very simple format, and it's just this right, left, right, left, right, left tapping, then it just, it's so practical, it's tangible, and they can enter into a more centered where they can receive other healing inputs.
I can see too in, and I'm sure you've seen this in groups where there are people certainly much more wired that way. Mm-hmm. And then there are others of us who, and I'll speak for myself, sometimes the breathing is great and I slip right into that. And other times I have a lot of extra energy and my mind's really going. And one of our other movement related practices is much more helpful.
Yes, I completely agree with that. And that's why I think it's particularly helpful for students or young people who have a lot of energy, and it's easy for them to quickly make sense of breathing. And another thing that just naturally, when you're drumming, you're breathing. You can't drum without breathing.
Right.
Yeah. And it's also just kind of recalibrating your brain right away. And it's just got all these other components. And I oftentimes, when I drum with students, what I find is that I teach them how to begin and I teach them how to close. And then there's when you do the same thing as a group, there's something really powerful when you end just same on the, all of a sudden there are all these beats and rhythm, and then you end all together in unison. It just like sends goosebumps. Students talk about how it sends goosebumps. That's them experiencing the power of social unity and oneness. And I think there's an additional healing component of that.
Mm-hmm. Is it, if people are doing their own thing in the middle, I've noticed in community singing, for example, people can go off in different ways, but there's a harmonizing that can happen, or even in humming when people sort of find each other. Mm-hmm. Does that happen in drumming as well?
Yes, it does. So first I set the tone, and I think it's really important, especially in education, to teach. One way that I use drumming is really teaching them how to follow. And so as an educator, okay, I'm the leader in a social drumming. There's always a leader, and then you have to learn how to follow the leader. And so I set the tone. And so then first we just get good at that bilateral right, left rhythm. And then afterwards, once they get really good at it, I will come in with a different set of rhythm that goes with that initial right, left beat. So they experience it. Then what I do is I introduce half of the room to use a different beat that harmonizes with the first beat they learned. And then later, when they really get comfortable with that, then I say, hey, if you feel like you have another beat that you can add on to it, please feel free, but give me an IQ so that I can give you a cue. And they jump in. Once you do that several times, they learn how to come in and how to come out of the beat. and they feel the power of harmony.
Mm. When you said that, it made me think of, which was different than I was initially thinking, improvisation in jazz, where you're doing your own thing, but it's part of the whole. It's mm-hmm. contributing mm-hmm. to the song, mm-hmm. to the music.
Yes, yes. And it's very much like that. But if you can't harmonize, if you don't fully understand where everybody is. And so this practice really helps not only to become aware of your own beat, but to really understand the cohesiveness. And that's what drumming does, is it brings cohesiveness.
Mm-hmm. And the listening, joining, yes, so yes. many things.
And following and mm-hmm. respecting and honoring each other's rhythm mm-hmm. and learning to harmonize with the rest of the group and mm-hmm. to feel belongingness.
Mm-hmm. What you mentioned djembe mm-hmm. earlier. What kinds of drums do you bring into your sessions, and do you have different kinds of drums?
I do, but I mainly use djembe. I do bring some other ethnic drums just to show students that there are different types. A dombe is another one. I think that's usually used in the Middle East. I've used Indonesian ones. But if kids get really good at it, I would also castanet, which is really small. And we've also used tambourine as part of it. And there have been times when students would say, oh, we have a congo in the other room. And the teacher had a congo that he inherited. So he would bring out the congo. And so then we would just add different types of instruments.
Mm-hmm. When I lived in Morocco, we would often, it was usually circles of women, and people would, you know, definitely use their hands mm-hmm. and the tea tray and spoons and sometimes the tea glasses. So it makes me wonder if you've ever made use of other materials that are there as drums.
Yes. And that's how we begin, actually.
Mm.
I usually only bring my djembe, and the rest of the people just use their hands or their desk.
As a way of beginning.
Yes. In the beginning, they would just use their hands and use their lap as a drum, or the table or their mm-hmm. desks mm-hmm. as drums. And that's how we began. And sometimes we would add even clapping into it. And we also could use our voices, like sounds from our voices, like ha, ha, ha. And mm-hmm. then how it, you know, and then kids would just come into it. And I've had instances where students have bring like spoken word, and then they would start, you know, incorporating that. Mm-hmm. And so, it can go in many different direction as long as they understand the concept. So it doesn't get chaotic. They can follow the leader and do it respectfully and honoring the group and the group sound, mm-hmm. That they're just not individual, but they actually are doing it with the group, then it just turns into something really beautiful.
Mm. Yeah, that container and safety and expectations applies to so many things.
Yes. Right? It applies to life. And I think it's a very beautiful way to set the tone mm-hmm. for the programs that we do.
And do you do this with adults as well? And if so, what differences do you find when adults come to drumming?
I do the same thing with adults. In my workshops, I have incorporated drumming, and usually they love it. And I think they experience what students experience, you know, the cohesiveness and the power of being in harmony and unity. And I think they have the same response because it's broken down into small, very workable steps. Everybody can tap left, right, left, right, left, right. That's all you do. And so some people, that's all they do every time for the remaining time, because that's, they're not as comfortable doing all these different beats. That's completely fine. They build the base, you know, they build the foundation, and other people could add different rhythms. So it's really fun practice.
And you've been speaking about the left, right, and you mentioned earlier that bilateral integration, you know, stimulation. And I know some of our listeners will know about EMDR and how that works, and others may not. Do you have a quick explanation that you can share about the power of that, or what it means to engage in bilateral movement, how it can help?
Yeah. So just the way the impact on the brain, the bilateral stimulation, has several components. It increases production of neurotransmitters in our brain. It improves our mood. It helps us to process emotion. It improves our attention and impulse control. And so in practices like trauma patients who can't get out of that repeated dreams of trauma and so forth, could do this rapid eye movement and brain spotting. You know, they look at, when they're thinking about that particular memory, where does the light spotting happens? And then so that's where the brain hemisphere where it's happening, and they try to remedy that. And so it's really connecting, without even going into all the biological and physical reasons and what's happening in our brain, it naturally actually can just play that out as you drum.
You spoke about the rhythm and setting a rhythm, having people come in. Do you have a playlist of particular rhythms, or is it one of those things that you come into a space and figure out what's needed?
Yeah, I think I'm for me, I do it more spontaneously, but for those who may not be as familiar with spontaneous rhythm, you can use other. There are many, you know, drum playlists that you can tap into on Spotify, but I like to do it more spontaneously, because every group is different. And so some groups you may just want to do left, right for a long time until they get used to it and there's a cohesiveness. And then depending on different groups, if there are more people who are more adventurous, then I may add on more complicated rhythms. But that's probably because I have experience with different rhythms. So it really depends. I think it really, as long as you can keep, again, very simple bilateral tapping as a main focus, and then any kind of beat, simple beats that will go on top, layer on top, anybody can lead it. Anybody can do it, participate in it.
No big musical background needed.
No.
Do you ever drum with music? And certainly drumming, many would consider music on its own, but with other forms, other instruments, or is it more helpful to have the focus only on the drumming?
I think you can. I have offered electives for students where we actually do the same practice without talking about how it's connected to all the brain and stuff. And then later on, we would do it. They get good at it. So then we would add on and do it to a song. But in a mindful skills group, I think it's much more impactful to really focus on the drumming.
If you're just joining us, you are listening to On Mindfulness, and I'm speaking with Benny Hope about drumming as a mindfulness practice. So if people haven't had the experience and for whatever reason don't see themselves going to a place where they could practice that communally yet, what would you recommend for them to try at home? And if you have a practice that we could do right now, that would be lovely as well.
So yeah, I would. That's actually a good place where you find a playlist of drumming, and you just relax, breathe, and try to find the center beat of that song. And then you jump in with just that bilateral tapping and see if you can come into a beat that harmonizes with the song. Mm-hmm. And as you do that, but the more you do that, the more you will be able to relax your body, and your body will begin to flow with the rhythm. And you can let yourself, and oftentimes you can start dancing. I would highly recommend it to anyone who wants to try that.
So drumming and dancing, I'm asking this as a not very coordinated person. I mean, coordinated, I could drum, but, you know, the chew gum walk kind of thing is. So would it be on a table or something and just moving with the music?
Yeah, it's drumming on the table, or you can do it by clapping. By clapping or using your lap. So, you know, on the side of your body, you can do, I mean, we often do, we don't realize we do this, but when we listen to music, oftentimes you will see people start drumming with their feet, tapping with their feet or tapping with their hands. That's no different than bilateral tapping. Without even you knowing it, oftentimes you are doing bilateral tapping. So it's the same concept. We're just, when you say drumming, people have this grandiose idea, like, I don't want to make anything silly or, you know, but we already do it so much all the time. You know, and some people do it in the shower, some people do it in the car very often. And so it's the same concept. It's really breaking it down. Even drumming can be overwhelming. We can just say tapping. You know, it's just left, right tapping. And so you can do that in a simple way and allow your whole body to just relax and feel the rhythm and release. And it's also oftentimes when I do it alone, again, I use it as a practice of worship, and I do it, and I have conversations, you know, and I process my emotions, you know, so anyone can do it.
But I'm sure you come across youth, adults with a range of different challenges and disabilities, and maybe we can set aside auditory sensitivity for the moment. But I'm wondering if you can speak out there to people who are listening and either themselves or someone they love has different challenges where they're already seeking that that stimulation or avoiding it or have other challenges, can't use their hands, ways that you have or have seen drumming be adapted to a range of abilities.
I think also, like, if you, when you play drumming music, there's vibration. So people who are not, who have auditory challenges could just maybe initially feel the vibration of it. You know, so that could be one way they can actually participate or understand the practice. And I mean, that's one thing that just really pops into my head right away. But I think, I mean, I would have to think specifically for different types of you know, challenges, but yeah, for people with auditory, they can do that. And if they have, if they're not able to participate because of their physical disability, also they could just listen. And I think listening and seeing how people, you know, participate in it will, I believe, produce the same effect. So you may want to have them maybe put their foot on a drum as somebody else is drumming if they don't have use of their hands. You know, so there, I think there are many creative ways to work around it.
Or drumming with your feet or sticks if you need the reach.
And yes, yes.
Yeah. In mind-body medicine, we have the shaking and dancing that we've talked about on the program too. And in the and the shaking is often done to drumming. And in between the shaking and the dancing or moving to music, there's a period of silence and just letting what has happened in the shaking settle with you, just feeling that vibration. Is there something similar in the drumming that you do? What is that like?
Yeah, so what I teach is I teach them how to begin, but also how to end. At the end, what I start is I do this fast beat drumming where you just tap very fast on the drum. So that's how I start. Then I ask everybody to join in and they start going really fast on the drum. And then I nod my head and that's a cue for everybody to tap the drum. Boom, boom, boom. And so after all these beats and different things and vibrations and all of a sudden we end. Boom, boom, boom. And then there's silence. I usually let that silence just sit for a while. And there's this incredible feeling that people feel like they participated in something. There was cohesiveness. It ended on the same way. And there's this like, And so I usually, that's a time where I just stay in silence. And people sort of bask in that silence.
Even without being told, it kind of comes naturally.
Yes. Yes, it just comes naturally. Then I may just say, okay, let's just breathe a little bit and just let that experience, like again, just work through your body.
I'm thinking about, I grew up in New Orleans, and so we would go to Mardi Gras, and Mardi Gras is not necessarily what people might think, you know, like it's solely portrayed on TV, but there's a lot of music and a lot of communal dancing and many bands that have incredible drum sections. And I don't think my husband was watching the Super Bowl yesterday, and there was another, I think it was Southern University, but there's a high school band that is really well known, St. Augustine band, and they have an incredible everything, and they dance while they're doing it. But the drum corps, to be so close to so many drums with a lot of people, was a really powerful spiritual, physical, emotional experience for me growing up. And and I know there's other parts of the world where there's these spontaneous, like in Catalonia in Spain, these spontaneous group drum corps that compete and they go out and for festivals. And we don't have as much of that here in Northern California that I've been able to find. Have you seen that in different places? In portrayed in different ways, kind of those public engaging people in drumming?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I've been in, you know, I've traveled quite a bit all over the world and lots of cultures. I would say most cultures have some sort of drumming and some sort of particular drum that's used for their traditional ceremonies. But if you really look at those practices, one thing it did, it is that there was cohesiveness that it brought in a community setting, whether to celebrate or to grieve.
Mm.
And I think those components are something we as human beings all desire.
Mm-hmm.
For belongingness, cohesiveness, and with in relation with others. It's almost like that's something integrated deeply inside of us.
Mm.
And so I think, I see that. I mean, in Japan, in Korea, when I was in Southern California, we would have these festivals in Sierra Madre, and our social drumming club would perform there. But most of the time, our group would just play spontaneously and interact with the people who are there. And oftentimes, people would sometimes just cry, or people would start dancing, or people would laugh, and it would just really change the mood and provide space for people to let their emotions and feelings just release.
Mm-hmm. I think people do think about drumming, probably have more of a tendency to think of the celebratory aspect or pure musical. Mm-hmm. Can you share an example that you have seen or experienced where it's the focus really is on grieving and tapping, no pun intended, tapping into those emotions?
Yeah. I think Native Americans have drumming where they're actually grieving. A lot of Native Americans, and I believe Africans also have drumming. I know Koreans, traditionally, when there was a funeral, they would drum. And people would also weave in moaning and groaning with the drumming. And so, it's just, there's something very primitive and primary about the vibration and the deep emotion. And as you release that, sometimes just like grunting, you know, moaning and just cries, if you would let it, it will surface. It can surface, not for everybody, but it can surface. We're just providing space for people to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And would you say, I don't want to put words in your mouth, with the intention of moving through and letting go, not letting go of, but less resistance, more acceptance and experience. Is that how you think about it?
You know, I think of mindfulness a little differently in that it's not just about emptying yourself, but it's really about filling yourself. And you know, it's like emptying yourself of the things that are really overwhelming and impacting you negatively. But we don't want to just leave yourself just emptied out.
Mm-hmm.
We want to fill yourself. You want to fill yourself with the things that are positive, things that give you agency, things that give you, that propels you to dream. And so I think, I don't know if this is related to your question, but I think it's really about that walking that out, and it could start very small, but it can be more involved in the practice. I don't know if that answers the question.
Well, that's helpful. I was speaking to the resistance that many people feel to difficult emotions, to the grief, to the sorrow, and feeling like, well, if I felt that, it's going to be too big. I'm going to get lost in it. I'll never get out. And so your framing is helpful in terms of, yes, you're moving through, you're metabolizing it so you can move through and you're filling it with something else. You're not moving towards being a blank slate. You're have some things to scaffold that movement.
Yeah. I mean, Carl Jung says it beautifully. You're not what happened to you, but you're what you choose to become. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes we're afraid, but the thing that I love about drumming is that you don't have to think about all of that.
Right.
Sometimes it's the thinking when we're approaching everything with our just our cerebral cognitive self that we're afraid to enter in. What I love about drumming is that, like I said, there's something very primary about the beat, about vibration. And so when we just enter into it without us naming everything, without us sharing those big emotions, there can be release.
Mm-hmm.
There can be ways that we connect to it. We can process it so that we can allow our bodies and our emotions to receive the things that gives us agency to move forward with.
Mm-hmm. Without sharing, of course, specifics or names, I'm wondering if you can call to mind a story of someone who came to insight or letting go or a breakthrough through the practice of drumming or being in community in drumming.
I oftentimes, when I do this class and when students get really into it, I have heard them share that it sounds very tribal.
Mm.
And I said, well, that's very interesting, you know? But the way I receive that is that it's tribal because it's tapping into something that is just innate in some sense. And so I share that with the students. And the students often share that they're not being judged. They can be creative. And particularly these wonderful experiences I had were students who've been marginalized, who've gone through crazy trauma, who's committed crimes, but they were able to connect without reservation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and just the sense of joy that comes out and just belongingness that they share, that they felt,
mm-hmm.
I think that's healing.
Absolutely.
I think that's restoration.
Yeah, joy and connection, belonging,
mm-hmm.
So central.
For them to initiate, if things were getting out of hand in class, like, can we drum?
Mm-hmm.
Because then they're able to become self-aware that they're dysregulated and they're recognizing, okay, I need to use this practice to regulate myself right now.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that's healing.
And have some agency.
Yes, and that's showing, demonstrating agency.
Mm-hmm. Is there a practice we could do in the studio or that you could do to give people a little sense?
Sure. If you would be open, we could just use our hands right now.
Sure.
And our lap.
Sure.
Oftentimes you get into it and your lap gets kind of sore, but that's okay because that's also a lot of stimulation going to your body. So it's actually really good for you and blood flow.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I do want to say that, drumming also is kind of like running. It has all the same components. When you lap, when you do this, this is just a simple beat. Or you can speed this up. If you can keep going with that.
Nice.
So it you could just add on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's infinite, I think.
Right. Uh-huh. Well, and there you have your body mm-hmm. parts, mm-hmm. hands or otherwise. And
yeah,
definitely very
portable. Yeah, blood stimulation, breathing, focus. And it's really, when I hear runners talk about what happens when they're running and they get this adrenaline, if you, in drumming, you can feel the same adrenaline.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, blood flow, breathing, everything, it encompasses all of that.
Lovely. Well, if people were interested in starting to learn about drumming and the benefits or just dive right into practicing, what would you recommend for them aside from doing what we just did?
Yeah, I would say, just like even forcefully laughing has benefits. Like our brain doesn't necessarily have to know whether it's real or not to receive the benefits.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what brain research says.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's the case, you can apply to this as well. So even just laughing, even when you're feeling sad, could actually recalibrate your brain. And so it's the same thing when you're drumming, you can do even clapping. I mean, in flamenco dancing, that's what people do.
Yes,
that you can
yes.
do all kinds of rhythm with your clapping. Uh-huh. So you can, if you want the same benefits as running, but you're not able to run, like you can start with, you can play some sort of song that you like, and then just start.
Mm-hmm.
That's why clapping has such healing properties as well. And so you can start with clapping.
Yeah, and even if you have one other person or if you're at a meeting or that, like being in a stadium where people are drumming with their feet on bleachers
yes.
is so powerful.
Yes.
But finding a couple of people willing to do that with you too, it seems like it would just enhance
yeah.
the experience.
I actually incorporate this in my company, we have centering time where I just play a song or whatever, and everyone could take a little 10-minute break. They can lie down if they wanted. They can stand, sit, or whatever, and we have this practice. And before we begin our staff meeting, I oftentimes do expressive meditative practice, such as drumming, clapping, singing, doing poetry, where it really gives people time to recalibrate and refresh. And every time we do it, even if it's very short for 2 minutes, you see the difference on their faces and their body posture. Mm-hmm. They can come into the meeting in the afternoon, tired, exhausted, full of things going on in their mind, but just a minute or two of doing it, like, you see the relaxation. So it can be done in any setting, any way, any form. It doesn't have to be so complicated.
Right. Something that you said is just so important that I think people new to some of these practices don't realize or maybe don't believe how quickly you can drop into another state. Mm-hmm. The whole take 10 breaths that many of us heard growing up before you respond, mm-hmm. right, is really based in a lot of neuroscience and physiology. And the drumming, the shaking and dancing, there's so many things like that that don't take very long to refocus things. So thank you so much for bringing that up. Is there anything else you'd like to say about drumming or practicing or anything that we didn't follow up on in our conversation that you'd like to share now?
I just would like to say that there isn't anyone who has not had pain or loss. And no one is alone or unique in that. And I'm just discovering there's so many things that are innate that's already in us, that we have everything we need to be able to find healing and restoration in our design as a human being. And so it doesn't have to be hard. It doesn't have to be so forced. It can start very small. It can start very simple, whether it's you humming to a song when you're not feeling good. It could be clapping to a song. So I would just love the listeners to think beyond, ooh, drumming. What does that mean? To, hey, actually, I drum all the time. I tap myself all the time. And when I go to a concert, I tap my feet to music all the time. Well, that's no different. Mm. So I just hope that people can take from this just something useful that they can just apply very quickly in their lives.
Thank you. That's a great way to come to a close. This has been On Mindfulness, speaking with Benny Hope here on KKRN. Community Supported Radio out of Round Mountain, Redding, and Bella Vista. Thank you so much, Benny.
You're welcome. This has been a pleasure.
Theme music on our show is provided by Omnificent local artist Rachel Beck. You can find Rachel's work on Spotify and many other platforms, and the song we play here is Oh Life.